Just before we go to today's episode, I wanted to remind you again about Freelance Heroes Day coming up on the 16th, 17th and 18th of May. Freelancing has been put in the shop window since the pandemic started, such to the point that there is growing belief that freelancers are going to play a significant part in the future establishment of startups and the growing of businesses too. So Freelance Heroes Day is 2 days of talk and a social media event too, panel discussions in there as well, to give you the tools and the confidence to help you face this new and exciting world. To take part in Freelance Heroes Day, then all you need to do is visit freelance-heroes.com and grab your ticket. There are still some early bird tickets left if you get there in time too. Look forward to seeing you then, as the future of work is in your hands. Hello and welcome to the Freelance Heroes podcast, to the 50th episode. Ed Goodman here, so grateful that you could join me today. And thank you to all the guests who have imparted their knowledge and experience and stories over the last 50 episodes. And thank you to you for listening, for your questions, for your feedback, for your reviews, wherever you're listening to the podcast too. Every time we get one of those, it helps other freelancers become aware of the podcast and the stories that are shared within it. So thank you very much. Here's to the next 50 and more. Now this week, I get to choose my guests anyway, right? And of course, they're based on what you want to talk about. But Les Howard is someone who is a VAT consultant here in the east of England. And he is one of life's incredibly, incredibly supportive people, and frequently he answers questions to help others overcome their own challenges within the Freelance Heroes community. He takes part in events to do the same as well, and I was really thrilled when he agreed to take part in the Thank Freelance It's Friday chat that we did, which you can watch on YouTube. I'll put a link in the show notes to that as well. So much so that I thought I would let you listen to his stories and learn from his wisdom for this podcast too. And we cover a lot. We talk about tips for managing clients. We look to understand what the causes of the imposter syndrome are. We talk about communities and circles, tips for tracking time. VAT might get mentioned in there. And jots and tittles too. It's a lot. Enjoy. Welcome. Hello. Thank Freelance It's Friday. And due to an absence, we're back with someone who I've long admired and delighted to have as my guest here, Les Howard. How are you, Les?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for the welcome, Ed. And good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Les is that close to me, by the way. I'm fairly sure if I lean somewhere out the window, he might see me. I'm not entirely sure where in St Ives, but I know that he is in the same town as me. Mm. Just before we came on air, I love this, because one of the things that Les said just before we came on air was nice to do something that wasn't in the rut that we've, you know, find ourselves in over this last year. What was the anecdote that you gave regarding the Australian road?
So it was a visitor to Australia leaving one of the major cities, and the road sign said, "Choose your route carefully. You're in it for the next 100 kilometres.
I love that.
And so often life puts ruts there, but we choose to stay in them. It's not always very healthy.
But that's because it's easier. It's just, you know, there's an element. Do you know what I felt after we came out of the first lockdown? The elements of, because there was this uncertainty, an element of Stockholm syndrome, that I felt more happier in that first lockdown than I did out of it. But as you say, that is the rut that we were in, and we're moving out of it. And we've got so much to talk about. We're going to talk about, over the course of the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to look at tips for managing clients. We're going to talk about what the imposter syndrome means as well. We're going to share tips for tracking time. We're going to talk about jots and tittles. You've no idea what we're talking about. You'll find that out. And also communities and circles as well. So there's a lot to get in. And anything that you'd like us to talk about, or any comments you've got as we go through,
this. If you're watching it live as well, then do comment. Just pop your comment below and get involved in the conversation. And if you're watching afterwards, then share your thoughts too. And we'd love reading those and respond to those too. And of course, there'll be an update on Freelance Heroes Day because, well, why not? Why not? And it's only a month away. So let's first of all find out a bit more about Les, who's here with us this afternoon. And I had a moment there where I forgot what time of day it was. I know what day it is at times, but it's in the title. So Les, tell us a bit about the work that you do. VAT consultant extraordinaire. I don't know another VAT consultant. I know many VAs and other things, but I don't know any VAT consultants. Anyway, tell us a bit about you.
Well, I think that one of the beauties of what I do is that not many people know two VAT consultants. We are a rare breed, and it does help being in a niche market. So I advise people on VAT. I help them through the VAT maze, to use our little strap line. Most of the people I work with are charities, and some of the people I work with are commercial organizations, professional advisors, solicitors, accountants, bookkeepers. But the heart of what I do is charities and churches as one sector within that.
So what was your background before you became a VAT consultant?
VAT. I've only ever done VAT.
So... No. Right. Just to be clear, no one ever gets asked by their primary school teacher, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the response is a VAT consultant.
No, nobody ever asked that. And I didn't. I didn't know. So in 1983, I walked into HM Customs and Excise in Peterborough. That was my first job, apart from picking strawberries and sorting packages at one post office Christmas holiday job. So, I've only ever done that. I was in customs for 3.5 years. I left and joined a little management consultancy company which did legal work for the motor trade. And I added in the VAT service alongside that. And then end of 93, I decided I wanted just to be a bit broader than one sector. And with their support, and actually we still do VAT work for that same company, I decided to go freelance. So 1st of January 1994, before most people watching this were born, I went freelance, which was a bit scary in those days because the whole freelance world was very different to what it is today.
Most notably?
Well, there weren't so many around. The support was very difficult to access. The internet was hamster wheel driven. And resources, which there just weren't the resources for being in business that there are today.
So I can't help but wonder as well, if you weren't a VAT consultant, what do you think you'd have been?
Oh, missionary.
Oh, okay. Well, of course, because the church is very important to you. And also charity. So we had this when we talked to Emma Wilder on this show a few weeks ago, who also focuses very much with charities. What is it about the charity sector that makes you want to immerse yourself so much into it?
I hope it doesn't sound pious, but it's simply to do with making a difference.
That doesn't sound pious at all.
If I can help a charity save a slab of money and, enable them to better do what they do, then I make a difference indirectly. Now, I probably can't get alongside all their clients for whatever reason. I don't have the skills to counsel people in mental health issues. If I can help the charity delivering that support to be more VAT efficient, then I'm making a little bit of difference to those people. So, yeah, that's what that's what I enjoy doing. And so, as an example, I had a telephone conversation with a retreat center. Again, it was a Christian group this week, and one of their marketplaces, for want of a better word, is young people, teenagers in a major city in the center of England. And they're making a difference, and well done to them. And if I can help them and equip them and give them some certainty on VAT, then I'd like to think I'm contributing something there.
No, I'm sure you are. And our mutual friend, Alex Hughes, is also a big fan of, I think it's not pious, it's the opposite. I think, you know, more freelancers should talk about why they make a difference, because we all do it. We all are in business for a purpose. And so we... fine, you know, we all need to pay our bills, we get that, but that's we're often, you know, there are other ways of making money, sometimes easier ways than the various freelance roles that we have. So kind of vocalizing and communicating the purpose of our business and the difference that we want to make, and it doesn't have to be from a charitable perspective, it can also be from, you know, just helping improve the lives of businesses that we work with by taking a lot of their workload off them, or by streamlining processes, or by making a creative difference. You know, I think we should all focus on what that is. And if that's charities, then even better.
Yeah. And I think there's a, you know, there's not a clear line between a charity and a corporate. It's a continuum. And you have social enterprises somewhere in that continuum. And, you know, it's how you work within that. And lots of businesses that, you know, that I've come across and dealt with are wholly charitable in what they do. They just happen to be a corporate that generates surpluses. Well, that's fine. I'm not going to judge.
No, I wouldn't be like you. And of course, if anyone does have a VAT question that they want to ask while we're on this show, then pop your VAT question in the comments box. Little will get Les more excited while we're together than
I've even got my book out.
Wow, that's not a book. It's a doorstop.
It's called the Orange Book, because it's orange.
Deep thought went into that. Which book's that? Show that again.
I'll show that again.
Just hold it a bit closer to the screen. I'm curious to know what book that is.
Orange Tax Handbook.
Well, it's a year out of date.
It's a year out of date, but because I know it well enough, I know the bits that are out of date.
Check you out.
I actually contacted the publishers who I know as well and pointed out an error a couple of years ago. And they put one bracket A when it should have been one sub 1A or something. It was a tiny, tiny error. But so keen are they to be absolutely accurate. They said, Les, we're so grateful.
I bet they were. I bet because I know you, that feedback would have been left with the absolute best of intentions and in the nicest way. But I hope that, and I'm sure it would have been received, because when you are such a reference tool, then yeah, you're right. Those little things. It also goes to show how closely you read it as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Have you got the old editions? Have you got them piled up in a part of your house? Or is this why you had to move house? You ran out of space.
So we still own the other house, and it's I'm afraid we've got a couple of editions in our office, but I'm afraid we have to get rid of them. One or two over the years I've given away to other people. If people say, "Oh, well, can I use, you know, one of your VAT books?" I'll say, "Oh, I'll pop it close to you." So occasionally we do that as well.
Well, before we get to the first topic, we do have a VAT question. So let's get, you know, just get the excitement. It's like, my first thought was, it's like giving a dog a treat. I didn't mean it quite like that. But anyway, here we go. So the first question is, what do you see as the key barriers to education around VAT for small business owners?
Oh, big question. I think the fact that it's perceived as complicated, because it is complicated, and therefore when you're working hard to establish your business, whether a freelancer or a small team, you think, actually, it's going to take me a long time to understand it sufficiently well, that, you know, and is that going to make a difference to my business? So there's a big perception issue, there's an understanding issue, there's, you know, how do you access the information? You know, I referenced HMRC website the other day for a client, and their guidance was wrong. So how are you as a small business owner going to know that that page is wrong and what parts of it are wrong? And, you know, where do you then find out what is correct? So that is a difficult.
And what's the answer to that?
Talk to people like me.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that makes sense.
I would say that, wouldn't I? I think as well, you know, HMRC are going to provide information. We would provide advice and guidance. So it may be there's a scenario where there's two or three choices, and we say, right, let's go through those choices. Which is going to suit you best? Which are the pros and cons? And settle on that. Now, you're never going to get that from the HMRC website. And I did that Tuesday afternoon with a charity in Southeast London, with a associated charity that delivered part of their services. And they'd got a potential VAT issue. And we'd, with my colleague Nick, who works for us, we'd identified three possible solutions. We favoured one, and in the phone call, we changed it to one of the others because of the details. But that whole process really would be impossible via HMRC website. That's where experience comes in.
You're clearly passionate about VAT and obviously the businesses you work with too and helping charities, etc. Could you ever find yourself retiring from what you do?
It's been a big discussion because Rebecca has been my business partner for 3 years now, and we have a great banter and enjoy cake. And part of it is my exit strategy. But the biggest battle will be me exiting. the plan, and we've agreed it in principle, is that, you know, I will gradually step back. Rebecca already is managing director, for want of a better title. I do enjoy it, as you know. And so it's going to be quite a challenge. And I'm slowly starting this year. And if you know me, please nudge me when you speak to me and say, Les, are you working less this week than you did a month ago, please?
It will be a question at the start of every mastermind group that we have from here on in. But I like the fact that you've put into there as well that you've agreed it in principle, but not definitively, and that you're gradually going to step back without it being defined as gradually is not a unit of time.
No, that's right. I mean, I'm sure as well, you know, there'll
Sloth
be times
move where gradually.
Rebecca will say, look, you know, I'm going to need more of your time this week.
Fair enough. But then it's not for me to answer, of course, but, you know, if you love what you do and you then, and, you know, well,
yeah, why then, retire? Exactly. Why retire entirely?
Fab. Well, we've got a lot more to get through as well from questions that have been asked in the Freelance Heroes community over the last 7 days. And the first one is a question that was asked with clearly a lot of viewpoints too. Excuse me. I have a client who refuses to brief me in writing, and it's always over the phone. And he's a little bit indecisive over what he wants sometimes. Is there anything that will transcribe his phone conversations? Mm-hmm. Now, I thought it was a brilliant question, because I think actually, and you know, it's easy for me to judge, and we know that these questions are often without context, but I feel that we're looking in the wrong place for the solution here. There are transcribing tools, I'm sure. You can record them, you can do them on Zoom, or we use Time to Gather, and they offer a transcribe service within it as well. But that does then, of course, actually, the bigger problem here, the bigger challenge is actually how you go about managing a client who doesn't want to conform to your way of doing it, as right as your way may be, and is often and can be so, I don't know, fly by night in their thinking about how they do things and want change. So how do we manage the kind of clients who are so challenging when it comes to you know, actually just pinning them down and getting clarity for what they want and how they then request changes throughout, and how we, because it's a two by way. We want to know how they work so that we can support them, but we need to let them know how we work too. But we often avoid having those conversations because we don't want to scare them off. So where do we start with this, Les?
Well, for a lot of what we do, it's actually not quite so difficult, because there is an external legal obligation on the client. It's a VAT issue that's live. There will be time limits. So we'll say to him, look, we need A, B, and C, and actually we need it by certain date, or you might get fined, or you might lose VAT that you thought you could claim. So the fact that there's an external obligation helps us in our sector. Now, there will be situations where that won't apply, in which case we, you know, we ping an email and say, look, this is what we think. You know, this is our proposal for you. If you want to go ahead, you know, again, we need such and such an information. But, you know, again, if they, I suppose there comes a point at which if they are not going to do what we suggest, well, we'll leave it. We won't keep chasing somebody who ultimately is not interested.
What about you? I mean, have you been to a situation where you've just said, this is too much, we're just going to go our separate ways because for whatever reason? And what have those reasons been, and how have you had that? I mean, I'm not saying that this example should have gone down that road, but what forces from your perspective you to go, actually, no, let's call time on it? And how have you had that conversation with them?
It's not very common because of our reputation, my reputation, it sort of self-sifts the contact to me. People come from the charitable sector because they know that's what, you know, I'm interested in and good at. So there's a tendency already for them to say, I'm going to like what you say to me. But even once you get through that, sometimes you just find it just doesn't work. And you say, look, you know, much as, you know, we're talking about VAT and we're, you know, swapping emails, etc. It's not working out. Why don't we suggest somebody else? Because, you know, the VAT sector is small and we tend to know everybody else in it. And it might just be that somebody else is better suited to you. So rather than just leave them in the lurch, you know, our preference would be to say, you know, why don't we find somebody closer to where you are? Do you want somebody local? You know, so that might be. So our preference would be to put them in touch with someone else, perhaps to someone else's. So look, here's a couple of different firms. Very, very occasionally, it's just the relationship has died.
Isn't there an issue, though? Because I like that. You know, you're saying no to a client, but you're doing it in a way that is providing them with a solution. So there's a positivity to come from that. And I get that. But isn't there a challenge then that because your relationship has broken down with them, that when you recommend them to someone else, aren't you just basically passing that negativity to another business that then could come back on? I mean, I'm thinking worst case scenario here, I guess, but you know effectively what you're doing is saying you're a bit of a bad egg for me, so can you go and be a bad egg for someone else? How about this company? And then
fair comment. I'm not sure I would send a bad egg to anybody else, because ultimately, as you know, as you implied, I still want those people to recommend me.
Absolutely.
I've discovered I've actually found that people that have stopped using me have gone somewhere else, have continued to recommend me, which, are, you know, is a brilliant position to be in. If I wouldn't suggest they go to, you know, another VAT consultant, that was going to be a negative there. If we just didn't get on, then that's okay. If they were a nightmare client, then, you know, they can find someone else.
Any of the responses stand out for you in the to that particular challenge? I know there's one for me.
Wasn't particularly, I think, because our approach was, you know, as I say, using this external obligation, and that's a big lever. And I think that's less true for, you know, people more broadly in the Freelance Heroes community. So it didn't, you know, everything was valid, of course, but it wasn't going to speak directly to me this time. So
there were two that stood out for me, one of which is that it's not uncommon for clients to be a little bit picky in how they go about things. It's what makes freelancers so valuable, I think, was one side. But the other side, and this is, for me, the best piece of advice to this, is when you have a telephone conversation with a client, and I do it because my memory is shocking. I can remember the lyrics of a song I haven't heard for 30 years, but if you want me to remember what I've just spoken about on the phone 10 minutes later, it often skips my mind, or the reason why I walk into the kitchen, that kind of thing. But to email. So just because the client in this issue didn't want to have confirmed by email what they wanted, there's nothing stopping you confirming it with them. So when you have that telephone conversation with them, confirm with them by email, this is what we've agreed and this is what we'll work to. That particularly stood out for me as well, which I like.
Yeah. It's good practice. I mean, we make telephone call notes and where necessary, confirm them back to the client or the prospect. Confirms what you're agreeing.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone works well from that. You as the freelancer and clarifying what's expected of you and vice versa from the client's perspective too. Now, a topic that comes up all too frequently, and I don't think will ever go away, and often comes up in the mastermind groups that we're on as well, is the topic of the imposter syndrome. This is it was a really long post that was put out, but it does kind of relate to a challenge about imposter syndrome and how it impacts us as freelancers. And if you're watching this and it's something that you feel impacts you, then you know, do leave a comment about how you manage your imposter syndrome as well. And I'm going to read through the question that was put up. I know imposter syndrome is a huge thing in the freelance community, and I had a realization in my life that I'd like to share and hear your thoughts on. As most of you know, I have a covert narcissist for a mother. She spent years wearing down my self-esteem and confidence, but also gaslighting, belittling, demeaning me until I internalized the abuse, which then led to me abusing myself and self-doubt. So here's my realization. The voice inside my head, the one that tells me I'm not good enough, that I'll fail, that I'm not worth helping, that I'm not worth supporting, etc., that's the imposter, because it's her voice, not mine. It's her fear, not mine. Which made me wonder, of all of us who suffer with imposter syndrome, how many have come from that kind of background and it is that voice within us? Or is it something else that is the cause of it? Now, I don't think it's as clear cut as that for most people, but it was an interesting perspective that we're often told this, and there's something in the background that may have addressed this issue or may have been the seed that's planted what has now manifested itself into what it experiences now. Is it something that you've ever felt yourself? And what about those, as I'm sure you have done, come across others who suffer from the imposter syndrome?
Yeah, it's something which will catch me from time to time. I try and unpick it. And it's one way of looking at it is someone else's lies have become my lies. And as that post was, it can often be to do with someone's background. It might be to do with a previous job. Often it's to do with culture. Because our culture screams at us, if we don't have a certain thing, we are incomplete. And that is a lie. They want us to buy a thing, whatever that thing is, or buy a lottery ticket, whatever it is. And so we're often surrounded by something that tells us our lives are not as good as they could be. I think the more I've become aware of that, the more I'm self-protected, if you like. So it's not something which I think has been a massive issue for me personally, but it has hit me from time to time. Sometimes just a thing happens, a little thing happens, and you know, the self-doubt comes in, the lies come in that don't belong. Obviously from a faith background, I have ways I can deal with that. But I was talking to somebody yesterday and we were talking about, again, it was mentioned in that post, about using self-affirmation to defend against it. So instead of listening to the lies that have got in, to say truths to yourself to say, yeah, I am good at VAT. Yes, I am, I am who I am. And, you know, to say those out loud to yourself, that's not a bad thing. It's not a wacky thing. That's a good practice to do. People write them down on a little card and they'll read them out daily to themselves. You know, say self-affirmation to strengthen yourself and deal with it.
Well, I mean, it did become clear as I read through many of the comments that actually a lot of people were experiencing some historical influence that can now be seen as potential cause for the imposter syndrome. It could be a toxic work environment that they were historically in. It could be a marriage or through growing up. And I was quite surprised, but, you know, I'm not an expert in this field, at just how much this resonated with so many people. So if, and neither of us are experts in this area, but, you know, we've both been in business for a while and we've come across others who do. But my thought then is, if something has caused, and we can now see the cause of how we're feeling from an imposter syndrome perspective, the obvious answer seems to be the only way around that is through counselling. But how else do we deal with? Because as you said yourself, sometimes it's the little things that cause us to, that inflames that imposter syndrome with others. And we can't, I mean, we can perhaps, but it's harder to then go and talk to a counsellor every time one of those little things happens. So what do we do? You turn to faith, but what else can we do to help us overcome when those little things cause that bigger self-doubt?
What one of the most important things that I've experienced and I've seen for others is to be part of a supportive community. And merely being in that community before anybody says anything is part of the defense, because in that community you're accepted. You're accepted for who you are rather than for what you have or haven't achieved. So the fact that I might, you know, when we get back to our Zoom group in St. Ives in a few months, hopefully, you know, we're sitting at the table with, you know, 10 or 12 people. We accept one another as friends and as colleagues together. And the fact that I've got, you know, a track record of mistakes and failings doesn't stop me being accepted in that community. And that's really, really important. And obviously, you know, those communities are online at the moment, but being part of a community which is by its very nature supportive and accepting is important. It's not going to solve all problems for everybody, except that. And for some people, you say actually counselling is really, really important. But, you know, community, for me, community is just such a key thing.
Well, let's jump. I mean, we can talk about that here. And actually, it links perfectly, because one of the solution, one of the challenge. So this was obviously a very personal challenge that the author of the post had written in some detail, too. And very and you know, in itself garnered, you know, several dozen responses from other people who felt that they could resonate with it and could offer. So no one judged. No one said you're wrong. Yeah. And that in itself can be so comforting in how we then overcome the challenge, because it gives us that mental strength or more mental strength to overcome it in a way that it hadn't previously, which brings us to you know, a topic that is very dear to your heart, which is around communities and circles, both professionally and personally as well. And you said at the very start of this that the communities for freelancers weren't there when you started out. And obviously they're a lot more prevalent now, and, you know, as well as Freelance Heroes, of course, there's many other great communities to be part of too. Could you imagine starting out now again, if you were to have your time again, without being part of a community?
No, it is, you know, looking back, it was just such hard work. And, you know, now, you know, people turn up at one of the Zoom groups and they say, I'm going to start in business next week, will you help me? And you think, yeah, that's how it should be, that anybody who's starting in business, even before their day one, has a community around them in some way. It just you know, to me, it just seems essential. And, you know, you can be sat in a room or obviously with Freelance Heroes with 12,000 others who are cheering you on. You know, that's what we're doing. You know, I'm not going to provide VAT advice to the majority of the 12,000 Freelance Heroes, but I'm cheering them on, you know, and I hope people understand that. And I know that I'm being cheered on by all these people I'll probably never meet, because that's part of what community is. That's really important. So, you know, we're corporate beings. We were created as corporate beings. We're not created as solitary. Now, except some people work better on their own than others. That's a personal preference or a different character. But human beings are corporate beings. If we were solitary, we would die out, wouldn't we, within a generation? Obviously. Or a couple of generations.
I love that. And of course, so much has changed. For me, the sentence that you said there that stood out, and of course, you know, it's not a great surprise when you think about it in the online world that we're in. But that moment where you said, actually, it's you're cheering on others and others are cheering on you, who you will never meet. And it's that bit of that which just goes to show how communities have evolved so much to the point now where I think too many businesses think they've got a community, but they haven't. They've got an audience, and that's an entirely different question. But that in itself, who'd have thought evolution would get us to that point? Human evolution would get us to that point that we would evolve into a species that can be sociable with people. And take the previous comment about imposter syndrome, really personal topics, but with people that you're maybe never going to meet? Or is it the fact that you're not going to meet them an enhancement to that?
Sometimes it helps. Sometimes it's easier to be vulnerable with a stranger. And sometimes that slight distance of it being a computer screen rather than a table and a coffee cup, you know, for some people makes it easier. Whereas for some of us, I'd much sooner be across the table with some coffee and cake, you know. But technology.
Without the people, or just the coffee and cake?
Oh no, both. but you know, it was always the way. You know, we our exposure in the missionary world was in Malawi in sub-Saharan Africa, and community is the thing. You know, nobody lives on their own there. You're thought of as a real entity. And community is very, very strong. So culturally, a lot of these questions are addressed in a very, very different way. And I think that's helped me understand it a little bit, helped me look at Western culture with a tendency to individualism from outside it. Again, I'm not an expert, but I'd like to think that's helped me navigate the world.
But I think that's an important part too, is that actually none of us are experts in this unless we're, you know, kind of PhD in anthropology. But ultimately, we look at it and how it affects us and how we position ourselves in the world as general, as individuals, let alone in the professional world. And then as long as we've got an outlet to share our experiences, then other people can consume those experiences and then make the judgment for what's right for them.
Absolutely, that's right. And you know, I can say to somebody in the situation, look, this is how it happened to me, this is what worked for me. If you don't follow my path, I'm not going to feel bad about that. But if it helps you to navigate, helps you to avoid something, helps you to grow, to learn from something, then it seems to make sense to me. And I know that others have done that for me. So you know, we give and receive. That's part of community.
Because you are a very community driven person, again, professionally and personally, but on the professional side of things, and that moment when you do retire, whenever that may be, do you still feel that you'll want to remain a part? Because you've got so much to give as well, and you're such a generously spirited human being, that do you feel that you would ever, even in a, imagine that you retired tomorrow, for argument's sake, and do you feel that you would still immerse yourself in the online and the physical communities because you've got so much to give and so much experience to share? Or will you step away?
I think I'd find it really hard to step away. I think, you know, because so many people in those communities, you know, are personal friends and, you know, are, the people that I've enjoyed spending time with. And if then I were to find that from tomorrow, I don't have time, you know, I'm not able to spend time with those people, I'm going to be the loser. And I guess, you know, if they're going to be the loser as well, it just seems daft. So, you know, even if it means we spend time together and I just don't do paid work for them, then fine. But, you know, my father retired at my sort of age and it stopped immediately. He didn't go, he was a big, you know, big corporate he worked for. He'd essentially worked there for 40 years. And he stopped and that was it, because that was the model of retirement. I don't know. I'd have to think through whether I think how he, you know, dealt with that and responded with that. But I don't think I could do that. And I think for a lot of us, where our professional lives are community, have community about them, I don't think I can just, you know, I could just walk away.
Well, it's safe to say that communities are richer for having you in them anyway. So I'm glad to hear that. Now, when I spoke to Les ahead of this call yesterday, I was sharing something that I'd learned recently. Of course, foolishly thinking that I might be sharing a nugget of new information with Les. I was wrong. but this is the idea that and the reason for it is the punchline, if you like, although not intended to be one, will come in a moment, is that the dot on top of the I, as you can see if you look where it says "Thank Freelance It's Friday" at the top of this screen, the dot on top of the I, it's over there in says is called a tittle. And I liked it because it changed the sentence, as opposed to dotting the I's and crossing the T's, to tiddling the I's and crossing the T's, which made it a far more enjoyable sentence that I'm looking forward to using in correct context. But of course, I said this to Les thinking that he might share my joy in this nugget of information, but turns out he knew a lot more about it and and its origins. So educate us, Les.
So the phrase "jot and tittle" is a phrase from the Sermon on the Mount. So it's a phrase that's 2,000 years old. So Jesus Christ referred to not one jot or tittle will pass from the law. And a jot in the Hebrew world, a jot was the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. And the tittle was a form of punctuation akin to our comma or apostrophe. So he's talking about, you know, the tiniest little dot or comma, if you like. So it means a very similar thing, but that was my understanding of that. And of course, jot or iota is a Greek word, and that's a Greek letter as well. So all these things have come through the cultures and the languages over the centuries. So there you go. That's my understanding. I'm sure there's somebody out there saying, no, actually, even the Sermon on the Mount there borrows from something else, which is not impossible, of course.
If anyone wants to pop it into the quotes that they feel, actually, I think you'll find it originates from here, then go for your life.
That's right. We don't mind. We want to learn. We're not offended if you found a different answer. That's absolutely
wholeheartedly, I have to say. Now, before we go on to our next conversation around kind of tracking time, and actually it kind of brings into a point the origins and how your own processes have evolved. And I'm keen to know what processes you installed when you started that you still adopt today. But I'll come to that in a moment. Before I do that, it would be churlish of me not to talk about the forthcoming Freelance Heroes Day. Where are we going? So when you go to the Freelance Heroes website, freelance-heroes.com, scroll down to this image here, click on it, you will be taken to the details of this year's Freelance Heroes Day, which, if you're watching it now, there is early bird tickets available. So this is our fifth birthday. Can you believe it, Les? Our fifth birthday of Freelance Heroes coming up in next month. And we have a day kindly supported by Coconut that is going to, or 2 days, as it's our fifth birthday, of talks and networking. So we've got Louise kicking things off with motivation, mindset. We've got a panel discussion about the future of work. We will be Dave Harland, if you follow him on LinkedIn, if you don't, highly recommend you should. We'll be talking about how to show your freelance personality and finding your voice. Sophie Cross, who recently launched the Freelance Magazine, will be talking about how being a delightful human is the best way to market your freelance business in 2021, with networking around that. And that's just day one. Day two is where we can, Jenna Davies will be talking about regaining confidence and gaining more clients post-lockdown. We'll have a panel discussion about taking care of yourself. Ella Orr is going to talk about the mental influence of social media. Danielle Bridge is going to talk about looking after our mental well-being, and I'll look at it from the focus of asking for support from your communities. Matthew Matola is going to talk about the future of freelancing and how us freelancing rebels are rewriting what it means to work, because that's the focus of the whole event. Robin Waite from Fearless Business is going to talk about how to grow a freelance business as well. And we've got the after party at the end of day two. So you can find out more about the speakers and you can book your tickets too by clicking on Add to the Basket when you go to the website. So freelance-heroes.com is where you will find out more about it. So book your ticket. Come along. Will you be there, Les?
I hope to be there. Life is busy.
I should add as well, it's free. It's a free event to those who are members of the Freelance Heroes portal.
There's
an added bonus. In fact, and I always get this mixed up, I don't want to promise to give away more than we are, but you get, when you sign up, you will get to you'll get a ticket for Freelance Heroes Day and a free welcome pack. If you sign up to 12 months of the website, your ticket for Freelance Heroes Day is free, and you get a notebook and you get a mug, but you've only got until the 22nd of April to be able to do that. Yeah. So lots of reasons to go to the update, but it's going to be a great couple of days.
So it's, I'm sure last year I was available to watch it free and dipped in and out of some of the sessions. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
It would. And if you know a member of the portal, then you can access some of the video, or you can access much of the content after the event. Because committing to two whole days is a big ask for anyone. So join the website and you can access the videos afterwards. And to echo your sentiments too, it's not the same as being face-to-face. Oh, how I'd love to be at the Grand Station in Wolverhampton, where we'd be doing this live with a couple of hundred freelancers to meet face-to-face. Would have been ideal. Not at the Britannia Hotel. No.
I once stayed there, but only once. Never, ever again.
No, well, no one told Martin. This is, by the way, Martin, if you follow him on Twitter, on Goldstack accounts, no one, he hadn't read the reviews, and no one knew until he checked in and then realized, I think he will join you in the only stay in there once club.
Yeah, that's it.
So that's Freelance Heroes Day. The last thing I would like to talk to you about, Les, if I may. So this was around a question about tips for tracking time. The actual question was, I'm wondering if anyone can advise on this. Those of you who freelance with various clients, how do you keep track on how much time you're working? Say you need to do 2 hours a day for one client and an hour for another. If also maybe you're not working those hours solidly, but an hour in the morning and one in the afternoon, is there an app or anything more organized that enables you to keep track of your time effectively? And like some of the questions, many people were more than happy to share their experiences and what they can do. And Toggle was probably the one that came up a lot. Harpoon was another one that was mentioned a few times, and there are others too. So let me first of all talk about how you would answer that question. But then let's talk about more of a conversation about apps and processes themselves.
So again, when I started, I did this. Again, the there wasn't very much. I remember using a product called Starfish, which was a little CRM. And that was nice. It had a nice appearance and it was a time tracker. Eventually that was the support was taken away. So that became unavailable. I moved to a product that Sage, the accounting people, put out called ACT. And that was very powerful. But
I remember that.
Unfortunately, it was very big. It was very bulky, really, for a freelancer. But it had an upgrade that meant that twice a week, you had to go into the innards of it and unset a setting because it stopped working. And they said, oh, no, it's because it works on Windows. It doesn't work on Windows. And I'm saying, well, don't we all use Windows? And so it meant that I'd purchase. I mean, it wasn't expensive. It was £120 in those days, which was okay, £10 a month. But it was becoming impractical because I had to do this thing all the time. I can't remember all the things we've used. Now we've built a team. The questions are different as well, because you need to find a system that more than one person can input. And the other thing that we find important is that our time tracker has to link with Xero, which is our accounting system. So we use a product called Workflow Max, which is not bad. It has one or two things you have to work around, and we're learning that. But it's seamless with Xero, which is really helpful when you want to do invoices every month, which is what we like to do. So I think, you know, and obviously, you know, apps are a new thing. Apps were not available in the old days when I started.
Here's my 1980s iPad.
That's it. Yeah. So I checked this morning, we have about 80 live clients at the moment. So we have to have a product that means that I can switch between those and enter time on each of those as and when I do that. And I might spend time on 10 clients on a day easily, as might Rebecca and Nick. So we have to have a product that is capable of dealing with that. We show time that we don't charge as well. Some jobs, sometimes we say, oh, we'll just do some research on something. And obviously we use that time. So we've got broad targets, but we're flexible because we want to be a community in our business. And okay, you know, we're privileged that we can charge a premium rate for what we do. We're privileged that there's a lot of demand for our services. So, you know, that, and a lot of freelancers are in a slightly different sector where you have to work really, really hard, you know, to meet your financial targets. Whereas it's probably less hard to get a day, you know, a salary, really. Count that a privilege that we do that. So, you know, that's how we try and do our time.
No, that makes sense.
The question was about evolving that.
Well, so I absolutely. I mean, I guess, you know, I was keen to understand. So, you know, there are time trackers apps out there, and Toggle, as I say, was one that was mentioned fairly frequently. And personally, it's an easy answer to give this, harder to implement. I would move away from a time tracking relationship with the client anyway and into a results or project based relationship. But as I say, it's an easy answer to give and a harder one to implement. But I think it's important for us to track time anyway, so that we know that, you know, we're being as productive as we can, whether it's time we're spending on our own business or time on clients and analyzing where we can possibly be a bit smarter in how we spend our time. But how much, you said yourself, you know, you use the old school pen and paper, and everyone has adapted, clients have adapted, you've adapted. But how reliant are you? This is the Freelance Heroes notebook, by the way. Look at that. I should show it accordingly.
I can see that, yes.
But how reliant are you? Yeah, are you still very much a pen and paper man?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. I do, you know, I have a calendar. We use Microsoft Teams. So I've got on today, Friday the 16th of April, I have a list of my jobs, which I want to do today, though, you know, that is a framework for the day. I know full well that, you know, I might get a phone call at 1:30 today that turns that afternoon upside down, and it might mean I have to reprioritize. So that's one of the things that, again, in what we do, we have to work quite hard to manage that. So I try and have a plan for the day that's loose and capable of being interfered with. You know, it might be a, you know, prospective piece of work. It might be a fellow freelancer who wants a phone call just to cheer them up or whatever. You know, so it's not just a fee earning thing, because we're people ultimately. You know, I'm a person first. I'm not a VAT consultant first. So, you know, my days are capable of being interrupted, and I think that's important. It's not always easy. You know, this time next week, I'm in an online tax tribunal, and I can't just jump out of that and do something else. I have to be there for the duration of that. And that's part of life, isn't it? It's part of what we do. There are times when our diary is fixed, and you know, we work with that.
It reminds me of once I read this in a book, the idea of Dan Meredith's book, How to Be Awesome. It was a longer title, but it's pre-Watershed. And he had this idea of a dentist appointment, which I really love this. So the idea being that when, like you said, there are some things that are fixed in our calendars and that's it, they don't get budged. Tax tribunal or a dentist appointment. Yeah, so when you go to dentist, that's it. That's that hour blocked out. Nothing moves that hour. It's there. So the implementing that dentist appointment into our own business diaries that we spend on our own business. So let's say an hour, it could be more, depends on, you know, how long you want to make it, but that hour is not budged. That hour is yours. Client goes, oh, can you just do this afternoon? I can't between 2 and 3 because I'm booked up for that hour. Implementing it again would be tough because, you know, clients, some things happen that we don't necessarily plan for, but I love the idea behind it that if we can, it can become a really powerful use of time.
When I started freelance, my children were 2 and 5, and one of the times that I would block out was my children, because, you know, obviously in the evenings they'd gone to bed and I wouldn't have time with them. So, you know, I would say, oh, I have children in need, to misquote the BBC fundraising things. So, you know, that was the time that I was going to spend with my children. And there's no negotiation. That's how it is. And often, you know, you can't replace that once you've lost it. And that's really, really important. And now one lives in Ireland and has 2 children of his own. The other lives in China and has 1 of his own. You know, the importance of that can't be taken away. So, yeah, you if you can build in your own non-negotiables, and that's part of the structure of our day, of our weeks, of our months, however we work it. Again, work what works for you. Don't copy me.
I like that. You don't do it in a judgmental way. You would do this, what works for me, and it's up to you what you take. I love that kind of support that you provide. You are an incredibly learned man. You're a very generously spirited man as well, and you always do it, at least I haven't seen otherwise, with a smile on your face too. So it's a pleasure, and a pleasure that you could join us on Thank Freelancers Friday too. What have you got stored for the weekend ahead?
One of the things, tomorrow morning, some of the men from church gather. Obviously, we used to gather over breakfast, but bacon burgers, bacon sandwiches. But we gather around a Zoom call for an hour. And that's one of the communities that I'm part of. And then so there might be 20 guys. We spend half of that time in smaller groups, breakout groups, just to support one another, a bit of accountability in there. And that's really, really valuable part of my time. One or two jobs to do around the house. We've only been living here a month, a very few boxes to to empty out. So, and we'll probably walk down into town, as St Ives town centre is 20 minutes or so walk from here. And, now we can go to a coffee shop, even if we can't stay in it.
Lovely. And I think Costa are selling all their drinks at 50p a cup at the moment. I could be wrong today, but I'm fairly sure they do. But I was interrupting you. In terms of the kind of big goals for the rest of the year professionally, what do you hope to achieve?
Not be working 5 days a week. We're building, there's three of us at the moment. I'd like to think there'll be five of us who are VAT specialists within the team by the end of the year, plus some admin support. So we're building a business. And again, that's not, it's not the exit strategy for every freelancer, but it was, you know, it's become mine. And as that team grows, it makes it easier for me to step back, to dip in and out a little bit. So we're on that journey, and we're trying to find the right people to join our team to be part of our community. So we're not just looking for technical skill, because you can learn that. We're looking for people that want to be part of a community. So of the pond we fish in, if people know about VAT, which is not big, the part of the pond where we're going to find suitable team members is might be a bit smaller, but we'll see. We've got people we're talking to, so we're hopeful we'll find some good people.
Good stuff. Well, good luck. Thank you very much for your time today. It's an inspiration to talk to you as ever. And I'm sure others will find that too from the many nuggets that you've delivered during our time. I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
It's been brilliant. I've loved doing it, Ed. It's great. And hopefully we'll all get across the table at a Zoom meeting not too long. Perhaps if it's warm, we'll do it outside.
Well, I did say that we'll do the mastermind group at some point outside, but we're definitely not there yet. Les Howard, thank you very much. Thank you for the watching and for the comments too. Come and chat with us more, either in the Freelance Heroes Facebook group or just search for the hashtag Freelance Heroes across social media. But other than that, bye for now.
Bye. See you soon.
Thank you, Les, and thank you again for listening to the episode and for as many of the previous episodes as you've listened to as well. I wonder if you listened to all of them, or are you a recent convert? Email me, podcast@freelance-heroes.com. I'd be thrilled to hear your story. Join us next week for another episode of the Freelance Heroes podcast. We're going to be looking at what it's like to start a freelance business in 2021. Until then, take care. Bye for now.